So I focused more on some of the challenges we've had and some of the things that we've been doing in Minnesota just to start to try to meet meeting fiduciaries for ELR. So I just did a very quick thing. If you don't know where Minnesota is, it's up in the north. We've got 5 million people. We have 87 independent counties, but the disease reporting all goes to us centrally. So we don't report to the locals and then to the state. We get everything centralized. And we've had ELR in production since 2000. So we have not very many. We have six laboratories or facilities reporting to us, but they've been doing it for a long time, and we've been supporting them for quite a long time too. We also had a shutdown quite recently, so we're still trying to catch up. We were closed for 19 days here during the summer. So in 2009, and I put the year in there, but it's basically when we started hearing all of the meaningful use things in Minnesota. We were doing a lot of things. We were implementing a new LIMS system at the public health lab. It's called ELIS. We were also implementing a new disease surveillance system called MEDS, and that's my area, and that's what I was working in. Then we had these six existing ELR feeds to a system called LARS. And the LARS system was taking the ELR feeds, and we had a very manual process. We got them into the ELR, we printed everything out, and people hand-entered them into other systems. So one objective of the MEDS project was to bring those fixed feeds into the MEDS system so they wouldn't have to do that double entry. We just released one thing, what we call automated disease reporting grant, with to one of the hospital systems in Minnesota. We call it the Make the ICPs Happy project. We wanted to get an electronic feed from the hospitals that had both ELR and case data. And this is what our EPIs had been working on, and that had been the focus from our EPIs much more than the ELR feed for a long time. They really wanted to continue doing this one, and we'd given out money to facilities to do this. And then we had an e-health initiative that started in 2007 that had a mandate to our hospitals and clinics to have an interoperable systems before 2015. So they'd already been working with work groups in Minnesota for a long time trying to figure out how to do things interoperable. This e-health initiative did not have laboratory reporting as a component. They had to be able to do aggregate data to generate population health reports, but ELR was not specifically mentioned in there. So when meaningful use came on top of this, kind of trying to figuring out how does this fit into to the stuff that we're already doing. So we did some decisions while we were doing in this mess of trying to do so many things at the same time, and then meaningful use came, we had to make some decisions. And some of these decisions were made before meaningful use, some of them were made kind of at the time when we started getting some more information. So one thing we decided was that these six laboratories that are sending us data, we're not going to ask them to change anything. So whatever they're changing today, we need to get them into this new med system, but we're not going to have them go out and change things unless they come back to us. We decided that med should be set up to consume HL725. And this is just a fluke. We did this before the standards came out. We had a long discussion. I had a lot of questions. Why do we try to do 251? We're, you know, everybody's sending 231. And we just felt like it's probably what's coming. So we should, if we're getting a new system, that's what it should consume. But that also means that all these existing labs that we had been working with that were sending other things, we had to make them, translate them into 251 so we could consume them. And we also decided we're not going to try to add any partners until we have these six feeds going in, and they were completing in November 2010. So after November, that's when we really started focusing on, can we get new partners in? Then the ELIS project from our public health lab decided that they were going to send electronic laboratories to us using this new guide, the HL7251 guide. And they made this decision after the guide came out and after the standards for meaningful use. But this gave us a very, very good opportunity to have them, the person who's working on messaging from the lab system is in my group too. So she is working on trying to get this message out of the LIMS system. We're trying to consume it. We have the same people together. We can kind of see how good is this guide work? What challenges do we have? What can we do? What do we need to tell our partners when they're going to do this? We've already done it. And then that also gave us the chance to making sure that we can consume the message. And then we also decided to continue this ADR pilot just because it was so important for our EPIs. We decided to use the DHL7251 message for that case feed too. The message doesn't really fit for that. We had to add elements to it. We had to do some tweaking. We had to play around with it a bit. And then we also had to kind of tell them that the facilities that had gotten this grant, that we would say that if they could complete this, that they would meet meaningful use, and we would kind of, there are not completely, if looking at details on what they should do, they're not really following all of the rules, but at least they're sending the alarm messages to us, and we didn't want them to stop doing this. And then I think if you have a disease surveillance system, the same the considerations we have to do too, that all of you, if you have these systems, have seen this. The med system, the needs code, the test and results combinations, because that's what it's using to make sure what disease it is. And the med system is set up to be very, very fine-tuned into diseases. We can set up security for a person to only get chlamydia tests or to only get whatever other tests, and it's based on the disease. So we had to make sure that these reports come into the right person or the right disease, because otherwise the security would go to the wrong people in the system. We decided that the existing senders, if they were not sending low-income and SNOMED codes, we would try to help them to translate it. And then for the new facilities, we would try to require the long, since that's how the guide set up and they're asking for the long codes. And then we also had to make sure that if they can send coded tests, we have to accept it. We don't want to turn anybody down. And we also had the last point, we need to be ready to receive anything. Even if meaningful use say it's 251, it should be this nice message. If they can't send it, or they don't want to send it, but they say we can send it to you in any other way, we have to be able to consume that. We just can't say no to an ELR, to any feed of data that somebody's offering to us. So we have some Excel files coming in that we're doing some stuff with too, just because that's what people are sending us. So some of the discoveries that we had while we were doing this. So when the public health lab started creating this message out of this USENET 251 guide, they had questions. And it was just not, it was tons and tons and tons of questions with pages up and down with, they compiled them into a spreadsheet and then we went through in meetings and tried to answer them. And a lot of these questions were related to how we would use the data. Because when they started seeing, if trying to following the guide, and they came up with how we're going to use, we had problems populating some data elements, for instance. If we weren't going to use that data element in the med system, you know, we didn't really need to discuss it as much as if we were going to consume it and what we were going to do with it. A lot of these were, we turned out to see that we had needed a lot of clarification on this HL7 guide. So if there's a facility who can take the guide and can create the message and can send it to us, then they don't need the clarifications. But if they have questions, then they can go to our MDA-specific guide and saying, wait, if for this data element, what are you going to do with it? And if we're saying we're not going to use it, then they can do something else with it. And we have some clarifications on exactly what they should put in there, too. The fact that there was no standard or nothing saying any meaningful use about how to transport this message from one facility to the next created much more problems than we thought, because it created a lot of questions. We still have lots and lots of discussions about how do we really make sure that we can receive these messages. FINEMAS is not going to work. It has to be something that everybody can send. I mean, you talked about that too, that we need to be able to receive whatever people are sending us. So if they're using Direct or if they're using whatever other tool to transport it to us, we need to be able to receive it. And we don't want to support a whole variety of different transport mechanisms. And we've been trying to work with our HIE to see if we can get Direct to send to FINEMAS so we can get FINEMAS, and we have that for immunization that's working for the immunization data in Minnesota. We also realized that the sender needs guidelines on what tests and results to include in the message. This was something with our own public lab. It was fairly easy to do. They printed out their test set, and then they gave it to the EPIs, and then our EPIs reviewed it, and they said, yes, we want exactly this one when it's positive. We want this one when it's positive. We don't want this one at all. We don't want care about this. But that's because it's our own lab and we could do that. So we created a mapping document four. This is the diseases we're interested in. This is how you would detect them in the system. And then, of course, now we got the tool to do it, so we're really happy that now we can just kind of skip that part and we don't have to maintain it. But we did this right before the RCMT tools were started. And then we also said that we needed to know a defined process. So we need to be able to tell a lab who says, we want to meet meaningful use, what should we do? That we can give them a step-by-step guidance saying, this is the first step you do, this is the next step you do. And then at some point you get the accreditation, but then these are the next step you need to do to get to actually send it to us. Because in the end, we want them to send the messages to us. We just don't want them to get accredited. We want the data. So what we decided to create as a result of this, and it's a lot of work behind this. It doesn't look like it's a big thing, but we created an ELR implementation guide that has a defined process for the facilities. So we can give it to them, and they can have this step-by-step guide. We have the MDH med specification for this HL7 guide. So we took the whole 251 guide. We went through every single object or element in that guide. We've added a column in a spreadsheet where we write down clarifications on what do we really want you to send in this segment. Exactly, you know, if it says first name, this is what we expect you to do. If it says OID, this is the OID we want you to use. If it's the receiving application, this is the text we want you to put in there. This is the sending application, this is what we want you. So we have went through the whole guide to do that one. Then we have the disease list that I'm not sure we're going to keep having in there. We might just point out to the tools instead. And then we have some guidelines on what they should do to send the message to us. And on top of that, we have a lot of Rhapsody work. We're using Rhapsody. So when all the messages comes in, we conform this to 251. We validate the message. We look at the content. We make sure that they get converted correctly. So we have a lot of Rhapsody work. We couldn't use MSS. We were not allowed to install it from our IT. Sometimes IT put their feet down and say, no, we're not going to let you do this. And that was a battle we lost. So we cannot have MSS installed. So we had to create all these routes on our own. So we have tons and tons of Rhapsody codes to create these. So we have one to create the ELR 251 message out of the LIMS system. And then they have routes to take these incoming files and get them to 251 and make sure that they're correct. And then we also have translation tables to translate test and result codes, just because these existing six laboratories that we have, the ones that are not sending us the standardized codes, we translate them. So we take their local codes, we make them into a loin code. Sometimes it's reloin codes, sometimes we've made up codes. We can find a good one just to get them into the right disease. So I talked to the person who is doing and extracting this stuff out of the LIMS system, and she gave me a lot of slides. I don't think I'm going to go into details on all of these ones, but if you want to talk to me afterwards, I can give you all of this. But she was pointing out we were trying from the LIMS system to create one XML message that they could use to send different messages. And they were having a lot of challenges with the fact that a lot of these messages that are going to different places are different and using different vocabulary. Hopefully that's going to be fixed by people start looking more at the messages and see what trying to standardize them up. We added the messaging to the design of the LIMS system after they started doing the design of the LIMS system itself. And they said that the sum of the database design isn't capable with been messaging it. They should have maybe changed some of that if they planned for messaging from the beginning. They were struggling a lot with the guide for the HL7 guide, that there's a lot of it's the first version of the guide, and everybody knew that. I was part of the team that was reviewing the guide before it went to HL7. There was stuff in the guide that wasn't done, so they were just struggling with that, and that's why we ended up having some clarifications to it. And hopefully there will be more versions and newer versions of the guide that has more things in there. Some data elements requirement that was in the guide was not needed by MEDS, for instance. We couldn't consume it. And that created work on both ends. They were really trying to use this guide down to everything that was in the guide. They were really trying to following it. And then there was some stuff that when you follow the guide completely, we as a consuming application didn't really care, so we created work on both ends. But we wanted to try to see if we can do this too, so it was kind of more of a test too. So for instance, you have the sender must, for patient name that are empty, you're sending the U in there. Our med system can receive a completely empty string, and we preferred an empty string, so we stripped them out using Rhapsody, and they put work in to get the stuff in there, and then we put work in there to take it out again. We will have to do that for other ones too. The OIDs created a lot of discussion. It still creates a lot of discussions. What are we going to do with the OIDs? Where are we going to get them from? How are we going to get our own OIDs? How are people going to know what OIDs to use? And the lab did not have the trading partners. When they send us the lab orders on papers and they hand enter stuff, they don't know what OID they have, and there's no way we can look them up. So the OIDs created buzz, and we need to figuring out a way. We don't have decided what to do with the OIDs yet. We have MacBank coding challenges. We've heard about those. Some of this is going to be fixed by some of the tools. But you need just the fact that you need to map this and change it takes a lot of skills. We had for the automated disease reporting, which is an AH and lab feed, but with more data elements, we encountered something that was a little bit interesting. They're sending their data from the lab system to their health record to get the demographic information. And then they pass it on to us. And in that translation, when they moved the data from the lab system to the health record, a lot of the coded elements were disappearing. So then when we wanted the coded elements, we got the text instead. And we asked them, can't you send that? They couldn't, because it gets lost in when they're moving it. And then we ended up having to translate text back to loin codes that they had codes for in the first place. And it just got messy and created a lot of work. And then the mapping, when we're consuming this message, the biggest challenge we have was just making sure that all of these test result codes get coded to the correct disease. The importance of having the epis involved in this process, I can't stress that enough, and it took us a long time to get the epis to understand that they needed to be part of it. So it wasn't until we actually really saw the data coming into meds, and then they start questioning, why do I get this one coming up as an other foodborne disease? And we tried to tell them, we couldn't map it, we couldn't figure out what disease it is, so you have this bucket of other foodborne, and then you have to look at it, you have to read the test, and then you can change the disease to what it is, or say that it's that you don't care. And it still takes a lot of time for them to review this. We're tweaking them all the time. And then we have a lot of messages that doesn't have enough information to match. When we get the messages into our disease surveillance system, we're trying to match up with existing events or create new ones. They're just missing too much information to be able to do that. Name, birth date, address, phone, gender, we use that to calculate the matches, and a lot of times we don't get enough. 40% of these incoming lab results has to be manually deduplicated. And that takes a lot of time. We have right now 2.5 staff who's daily going through this and deduplicating it. And this is 6 feeds, so we have to figure out a better way to do that. So I think the last one is kind of tricky, but because how we're mapping stuff and how they're coming in. So I think that's mine. You can talk to me afterwards if you've got more questions, or if you want to know more about the guide. It's going to be published on our website. It's going through the last review from our EPIs. We were closed for a while, so I was going to have it done until today so I could have published it, but it will be there probably within the next week or two, and it's going to be on that link, that whole guide. Yeah.
Any questions? Any questions for the panel?
I have a question for OSHA, and it's on, I actually have a couple of questions, but on Rhapsody, did you get Rhapsody via the CDC contract?
Yes.
You did. And are you using it both to do vocabulary mapping at the local level, as well as what components are you using the integration engine for?
We're translating the messages from whatever format. So
the question
oh,
was
sorry,
what we're
here.
Using Rhapsody for. So we're using it to change whatever message that comes in to a 251. And we're using it to look at all the vocabulary in the message to make sure that the codes are correct.
Yes,
and then we're also translating the long codes or whatever chest code we comes to the codes that we requires in the test system
mm-hmm.
or in the meds. So we're doing all things of it without using the MSS. So we did all this coding of this on our own with mm-hmm. some assistance from Orion.
And was there a reason why your IT department would not let you install
yeah.
MSS?
Yeah, we're a Unix shop.
Ah.
Earlier there was a question regarding support for the open source concept, and I think, at least from my perspective, it seems that you know, this has always classically been one of the problems with open source, is that a lot of organizations want to be able to buy their support rather than provide it internally for whatever reasons. And I think that where there's been real success in the open source community, it's happened because there's been participation by private vendors that have stepped up to the plate and said, hey, we'll support that product, and actually done quite well at it, Red Hat being the classic example. So my question is, what kind of strategies could we use or adopt that would encourage participation by various vendors that are already involved in public health to step up and maybe provide support for some of these open systems type of projects that would help encourage use?
Great statement. I completely agree with you, and I think that we need the vendor participation. I believe that once we go through this evaluation of need and assess the landscape and look at the different components of the open source applications, not just the messaging framework, but the comprehensive enterprise solution, then we can approach our vendor community and look at them and say, we would like you to support X, Y, or Z, and, you know, and be the keepers of the source and the governing body and all of the rest of those things. I think it's absolutely imperative that we do that to sustain it. So, I mean, there's a couple different models. Obviously, there's approaching the vendor, and then, you know, we've got support from CDC, and do we hire and create this foundation that actually is that governing body, and that's our support entity? I'm not sure if that model is completely sustainable, and I agree again with your comment. I think that us approaching the vendors is going to be very critical once we've established what the baseline need is.
Sorry, I'll be quick. I know everyone's ready to leave. I believe this question is for Ms. Schmidt. I'm from the Houston area, and we too are battling with converting the 2-3 message to 2-5, and our staff is very limited. So my question to you is, how long did it take you to, I guess, implement that process, as far as like a time frame, to have something consistent where you can piggyback on and do that for each test at each hospital? Because we are really struggling with just converting one message, you know, from 2-3 to 2-5 in a reasonable time frame.
I don't have a good answer to that, because it is very time consuming. I think right now it takes my staff about 2 weeks to get a new feed in and through Rhapsody and make sure it's all correct, and then that's if it's a fairly nice message. I'm more hoping for people starting sending these 251 standardized messages, then the time would be, we would use less time on our end.
Do you mind if I comment on that? So it's about your process and exactly how you're taking the messages in and what you're doing with them before your transformation. From a maintenance standpoint, if you transform them to some intermediate form, you know, like an XML form, and then have channels defined that are, you know, this XML to, you know, an HL7.2.3.2.5, because you may have multiple consumers at the end of the day. One uses 2.3, one uses 2.5, the next one uses something else. So if you actually have some intermediary there, and that's what we've done, and actually if I have a message and I need to convert it from any stage within our pipeline, it's a flip of a switch. It's minutes, because you know, now that I've got the initial channel built, you know, to actually take that and convert it and normalize that message into a unified framework, now I can do whatever I need to do with this message, and then I can transport it anywhere, and it can get consumed by anything. So it really shouldn't take you that long if you look at the way you're architecting your pipeline to take care of those messages correctly. Agree?
Yeah, it's architecture.
It's all architecture. It's absolutely application architecture. Then you're going to have problems. Absolutely agree. And that's why we went away from that architecture completely.
We also have a couple of mappers from standards group that that might help you. 251 to 231 mapper and 231 to 251 mapper are specific to ELR. But that would be a starting point where you can take that and start looking at it, and maybe it'll be helpful to you. Any other questions? Thank you, everyone, for coming, and round of applause for our panel.